Yeah, hi everyone. I'm Sam Young from Cambridge. I will talk about stuff that I think never came up during the sessions here. So hopefully you will find it entertaining. My talk is in three parts. I will start with the background on what convening stars are. I will present a method that we came up with to find convolving stars using astrometric data like Gaia. And I will show some, in the last part of my talk, I will show some results, recent results using DR2, mostly by others, but my hope is that it will stimulate discussion afterwards. So I would like to start from beginning. We think stars form clustered. How do we know this? We know this because when we look at star-forming region, here's an example, RCW38. When we look at the region in optical, of course, it's dark because of the dust, heavy dust extinction. But when we look at infrared, the very young stars within the cloud are not randomly distributed. Rather, they are highly clustered in what we call embedded cluster, given the name for the obvious reason that they are still embedded in gas. And in fact, almost all stars in giant molecular cloud are thought to be forming these embedded clusters. What happens to these embedded clusters afterwards depends sensitively on how efficient the star formation was, so how much mass of the gas was turned into stars, and how quickly the gas is expelled. But once the gas is expelled, you will be left with a range of co-moving systems. The spectacular examples, such as Beehive or Pleiades cluster, it is thought that comparing the rarity of these systems as opposed to the high frequency of embedded clusters in giant molecular clouds, it is generally thought that only less than 10% of embedded clusters from very dense cores with high star formation efficiency will be left as these open clusters. More commonly, we will find associations and moving groups. So here's another very loaded term in astronomy. Moving groups, it is still used in certain community to refer to stars that are born together and are moving together with very small dispersion. So here I'm showing a compilation made by Gagné et al. For associations and moving groups within 150 parsec from the sun. On the x-axis is the age. On the y-axis is the velocity dispersion of its members. And as you can see, pretty much all of them are within 3 kilometers per second for their dispersion. I honestly cannot tell you what the difference is between associations and moving groups and how it was used in this compilation. And then on the smallest end, there are wide binaries. So these were first detected as a statistical excess of pairs on small angular separation. If you have astrometric data, the way they are usually selected is you select pairs with projected separation less than, say, 0.1 parsec, and proper motion differences that's less than what is expected for a Keplerian orbital velocity. So the wide separation usually refers to about 1,000 to 100,000 AU. And actually, the very existence of these very soft wide binaries is a bit curious. They are unlikely to form from, say, core fragmentation because the cores that produce multiple stars are usually about, their size is about 1,000 AU, so the wide binary just doesn't fit in there. They are also unlikely to have formed dynamically, say, through three-body interaction of field stars, where one particle would act as the energy sink being escaped, just because the rates would be too low. And it also would be inconsistent with the fact that wide binaries usually have identical metallicities. So one idea that has been put forward for the formation of these systems is that they are frozen out as the cluster expands and the cluster potential becomes less important. When that happens, if a star happens to have a close companion nearby in phase space coordinates, they could end up bound together. So I consider this range of, sorry, I should have mentioned something. So not only there might be a connection with cluster dissolution and wide binaries, the way these wide binaries are selected, if you consider, say, two equal mass solar mass binary at 1,000 AU circular orbit, the orbital velocity is 1.3 kilometers per second. So just because you selected them because the proper motion difference is less than the orbital velocity of what is expected for a certain assumed mass of the binary, that doesn't mean you detect that orbital velocity. And at the widest separation, you will be selecting them because they are just co-moving. So I think of this range of systems as representing a phase between star formation and the general field population, and a detailed census of these systems within certain volume will depend on both ends, how star formation happens and how these systems are eventually disrupted. One interesting question is how far out in terms of pair separation can we find these co-moving pairs? I'm showing one prediction from a wide binary evolution simulation. So what is shown here on the x-axis is log projected separation in units of tidal radius. The tidal radius around solar neighborhood is about 1.7 parsec. On the y-axis is the histogram, the number counts in each logarithmic bin. In log scale. So in this particular simulation, they put in an initial wide binary separation of 0.1 tidal radius, which is shown in this green line. This is projected, so that's why there is a distribution to smaller projected separation. And when they evolve the binary, and more importantly, follow the binary even if they are escaped in the energy sense and plot their projected projected separation distribution after 10 giga years of dynamical evolution, you end up with this blue histogram. What they find is that there is a minima at about 5 times tidal radius. And even though these wide binaries become unbound in their energy, they will remain co-moving to very wide separations. The red histogram is the same as blue, only they have selected those that they consider escaped in energy sense. If you look at the velocity difference between these pairs, you have the Keplerian fall off here, but then even though these wide binaries become unbound, they will remain as small velocity differences at these larger separations. So this unit, 10 of this unit would correspond to 0.5 kilometers per second. Another prediction comes from simulation of clustered star formation on galactic scale. I'm taking this plot from Kamdar et al., recent paper by Kamdar et al. So what they did is they do orbit integration, assuming all stars are born in clusters, and they set up the initial condition of clusters such that they can simulate the disruption without self-gravity. And here I'm showing the distribution of pairs that they end up with after 5 giga years of evolution. On the left plot, I show the separation of pairs in parsec, and on the y-axis is the 3D velocity difference in kilometers per second. The color represents conatal fraction, meaning that whether they were born in the same cluster or not. The color scale is such that this white boundary is about 50%. So what they find is that even if out to 20 parsec of separation or so, if you select pairs less than, say, velocity difference less than, say, 2 kilometers per second, they are likely to have come from the same cluster. The right plot shows the same information, now just selecting separation 0 to 20 parsec and collapsing it, shows the conatal fraction as a function of velocity difference. So it would hit about 0.5 at between 1 to 2 kilometers per second. I thought it's worth reiterating that these systems are the best and most important stellar benchmarks. So we can ask, for example, whether stars formed out of the same birth cloud have the same chemical abundances. Of course, there has already been a lot of work done on that from spectroscopic surveys, and the answer seems yes, but it would be interesting to push it down to low mass, low density systems. Another direction that's interesting now that we have Gaia data is how to properly model their color magnitude diagram. One direction that I think is interesting is going beyond estimating age from color magnitude diagram and to see if whether we can actually improve our stellar models doing a proper hierarchical modeling. And I think there's already been some work put into that direction. If you're particularly interested in low mass systems, there is a, I call practical advantage of studying low mass systems in this co-moving systems, because you can transfer the more precisely constrained parameters of brighter stars to its companion. So people knew that young stars, as young as to host a debris disk, exist outside of clusters in a field that seems like just field stars. And they were trying to find ways to discover these young systems. They were looking at, for example, UV activity, X-ray luminosities. But it turns out one of the most reliable ways to find these young systems, young stars, is to look whether they have co-moving companion or not. But it took a while to find the diffuse co-moving systems such as Beta Peak Moving Group or Tokor Moving Group. And the reason, of course, is because if you're looking for large open clusters like Pleiades, they are sort of hard not to find. But if you're looking for these very diffuse systems where they only pop out if you consider their motions altogether, you need an astrometric survey. And that's where Gaia comes in handy. So the defining characteristic is of all of these systems is that they are over densities in velocity space with small dispersion, typically less than 2 kilometers per second. And that's why Gaia data is so great to find and study these systems. I thought I would highlight the important differences between its predecessor Hipparchos. Because Gaia is all sky rather than having input sources, it really enables finding these systems. Another difference is that Gaia has onboard radio velocity detection, and I think that really enabled some of the early discoveries that I'm going to later discuss. Another thing is Gaia's magnitude limit is 20, and because of how the IMF is shaped, it's really helpful to get the entire census of systems. So given this background, I will present one method that we came up with to use these astrometric survey data to find convex stars. What we consider is a pair of stars, and we pose the question as a model selection problem. So given a pair of stars, we ask whether it's more likely that they have the same velocity vector or two independent ones drawn from certain field population that we assume. So we have five astrometric parameters, and we fix the position because they usually have negligible error compared to the other three astrometric parameters. And they are connected to distance to the star and the velocity vector of the star. And of course, the noise contributes to the measurement as well. So this unit of diagram describes our likelihood function for a single star. And if I now convert the question that we are asking in each case in this diagram, what's important to notice is that there's one velocity vector involved in case one as opposed to two in case two. The quantity that we use to select these pairs is marginalized likelihood. So we marginalize over all components of the velocity true velocity that we don't know, and use the marginalized likelihood ratio in each case to select co-moving pairs. We apply this to T-guess data, which is a component of Gaia DR1. We selected 270,000 pairs with certain parallax signal-to-noise ratio cut, with certain 3D separation cut, with certain tangential velocity difference cut. So in this diagram, I'm showing the quantity that I want to use to select co-moving pairs. They are just probability density. On the right, I show the 3D separation on the y-axis, it's the tangential velocity difference, and each point in this plot is a pair of stars. If the pair is co-moving, the tangential velocity difference will be small. If I now color this distribution by the tangential velocity difference shown here, for the ones with small tangential velocity difference, the peak is at about 6 and narrow. And as I move to larger tangential velocity differences, the distribution will be peaking at lower values and getting broader. Based on this, we selected marginalized likelihood ratio in natural log larger than 6 to be co-moving. Here I'm showing the entire pairs that I selected projected onto the galactic plane. The entire region is about 300 parsec around the sun. The numbers, out of 270,000 pairs, we select 13,000 candidate co-moving pairs among 10,000 stars. And what became apparent is that some pairs are connected to form larger connected components. So we rediscover Pleiades, for example, as 151 stars connected by 3,400 pairs. And here are just some visualization of some of the connected components that we found. The size of connected components, meaning just the number of stars in each group, range from just pairs to 151. And if I now show this plot again and select only pairs with more than 5 stars in each group, this is what I end up with. And if you are familiar, you may pick up this Scorpius Center's star forming region and other clusters. So here I'm over plotting known open clusters from a catalog in these blue circles. The gray points are individual sources thought to be associated with OB associations. So as you can see, we pick up the right structure using this method. And it's obvious that there are groups that hasn't been found yet. I highlight some examples in this red circle here. And if we, of course, the most common kind of group is just two stars, just pairs, and they are pretty much all over the place. In the last part of my talk, I thought I would try to summarize some interesting results from using Gaia DR2 data. The usual caveat is that it's biased and incomplete. There has been more discoveries. For example, one of the new groups that we found, others have confirmed using DR2 data. And of course, because the magnitude limit is so much deeper, we can find many more members in this group. So the member increased from 9 to something like 70. Although some of it depends on confirmation. And it turns out this group has a comparable age to Pleiades, only it's so much closer, meaning that we can study it in more detail. Others have found groups with interesting morphologies. So here's one of such group that has a length of 400 parsec below the galactic plane. I should have said that the coordinate system is such that this towards plus x is galactic center, plus y is galactic rotation. They have about solar metallicity, and the authors estimate the age to be about 1 giga-year because there are some giant stars associated with it. And I noticed that they make a connection to the spur feature in GD1, so I'd be interested to hear any opinions. I think my astronomer's goggle is not quite good enough, but yeah. Another thing is that tidal tails have been found around open clusters. Two independent groups have found tidal tails around Hyades, one of the largest and nearby systems. On the left, so these plots, all the coordinate system is the same. On the left, this group only used stars that have RV, so that's why they have fewer stars than another group have identified. Here, the magenta points are what they label as contamination. But you can see the leading arm, the trailing arm, and the lines and yellow region here are modal prediction from two different group. The discovery goes on. Tidal tails around the Coma Berenices have been found. It's the same thing as Hyades. It turns out in proper motion space, this Coma Berenices is quite close to one other group that I identified in TGAS, and that's this group right here. This one also has an interesting morphology. It looks like there's two strips, which was sort of visible in TGAS data, but with many more stars in the group with Gaia DR2, it becomes more clear. The list goes on. Tidal tails around Ruprecht 147, around Precepi has been found. The discovery of Precepi was, I think, about 2 weeks ago or a little less. So I'm sure the discovery will go on. Finally, I thought I would mention we can now study the internal kinematics of these co-moving systems. Here I show for some of the larger open clusters within I think 250 parsec or so, the nominal velocity error that DR2 data gives. As you can see, for many of the systems, sorry, I should explain. The blue is, blue and orange is tangential velocities in RANDEC. The green is the RV uncertainties. And as you can see, for many of the systems, we actually reach sub-kilometers per second precision. So we can look for, we can go beyond constraining the mean motion of these systems and look for systematic patterns in the velocities. Just as a caveat, there are systematics to consider, of course, like rotation of the reference frame and binaries, which are which actually model up the signal that you're looking for. But there has been already studies using the DR2 data. For example, Kuhn et al. Studied 28 systems, something like 28 systems that are very young, and looked for signs of expansion. They find that about 75% of the systems they look show sign of expansion at 0.5 kilometers per second, although the systems have dispersion that's much larger. Here I'm showing one of the, I think, best examples that they have. The x-axis and y-axis is just x-y positions, and each arrow shows the velocity vector.
I heard that new analysis is showing that some of these don't have expansion, like
I was just, I was just going to mention these are early studies,
yeah.
And I'm sure we will have to see whether it stands as others validate. And I thought I would, since we have found streams in very nearby neighborhood where we have virtually all 60 information, and there are so many dynamicists and stream experts in the room, I thought I would end with one question. That is, what can we learn from having this precise 60 phase space coordinates of streams? Okay, I think I have 3 minutes left, but I will just quickly summarize. My points are simple. Coombing stars represent the phase between star formation and field stars, and I hope to have convinced you that they are interesting. I presented a method of finding coombing stars using astrometric data like Gaia, and showed the results applied to the TGAS data. And from the examples I showed in the last part, I hope it's apparent that Gaia is providing a very dynamic view of coombing systems, and there's more to do. Thank you.
Thank you for this presentation. It got me thinking, especially related to your last question. So you have these tidal tails around so many of the local clusters, which in a sense is giving you a local measurements of the tidal tensor at different points relative to the sun.
That's what I was thinking exactly.
So have you looked into this at all yet, or are you planning to?
So I plotted for Hyades and the 400 parsec stream the differential velocity as a function of position, mm-hmm. and there are gradients, but I wasn't quite sure where to go from there. So I was thinking like it would be measuring Oort constant at different locations, maybe.
So, do you think we could start comparing the models that would give us the clumpiness of structure that remains after star formation to the data like yours? Is it easy to compare your measurement of clustering in the distribution of stars to the models? of star formation in the disk?
I think we should be comparing. I'm not quite confident about my current catalog because it needs to be updated. But I think we should be simulating clusters, how clusters star formation would evolve, say, in dynamically evolve in, say, a giga year's time, and comparing it to the DR2 data.
Just to follow up on that, this is super exciting stuff. You talked about the properties of clusters themselves. That's really, well, for idealized ISM studies, that's super interesting. For like the kind of cosmological simulations we do, that's just too small scale that we can. But I was thinking about the spatial correlations, the end velocity correlations of clusters themselves on sort of hundreds of parsecs to kiloparsec scales. And we are getting to the point where at least we can start to touch base with those scales. And so that seems like a potentially exciting meeting ground is sort of what the local structure of these clusters are on sort of sub-kiloparsec scales. Mm-hmm. I don't know, has anyone looked into that in much detail yet?
The one simulation that I showed from Herschel Kandar.
Right. Observation.
Sorry, observation. Observationally, people are describing these systems and finding these systems individually. But my personal view is that we should really be systematically looking
right.
for them.
I think that's super exciting.
Hey, so on the things to do with streams of two stars, we've discussed this at some level, right? And I know Adrian and David have, but I think maybe the summary point, right, is that if you're looking at the distribution of, pair separations, then that's going to evolve differently under different levels of lumpiness of your potential stochasticity,
yep.
right? And I think the Tremaine models didn't, sorry, I don't remember the first author, was in a smooth potential, right? So this is going to tell us something. And the wonderful thing about the co-moving pairs is you're sampling many, many different orbits, right?
Yes, they included, yes, it is in smooth potential, and they include the kicks from field stars. But for example, they didn't include molecular clouds. And yeah, I think that's an interesting direction to look into. And actually, I forgot to thank my collaborators, which are listed in the bottom. Sorry about that.
Other questions?
What is known about the intrinsic shapes of these open clusters, and has Gaia improved our knowledge in this area?
I don't think I can really summarize the state of literature on the shape. It's quite obvious that the shape is very varied, and say if you have identical open clusters that experience a different journey throughout the galaxy, you will end up with very different morphologies. I think Gaia definitely improves on that. One thing that really needs to be taken into account is you will naturally see the finger of God effect because of parallax uncertainty. So you need to carefully take that into account if you want to infer the shape.
Yes, so two quick comments. Simulators should remember that these clusters, some of them have been seen to have rotation.
Mm-hmm.
I think a couple of opens and maybe a dozen globulars. At least, I know some are very clear, others are weaker.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of the globulars are like plus or minus four. I forget the numbers. But I was very impressed by the claims and the data presented. So simulators should remember that.
Okay.
But the second comment was about the chemical tagging of the stars to the cluster. In the review that I wrote with Krumholtz and McKee, we actually catalog all those details, the update of those details. There's not a single open cluster where chemical inhomogeneities have been detected out of hundreds, except for very, 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 very tiny measurement errors, like solar twin work, where they get down to 0.02, 0.03 dex.
Mm-hmm.
But at the level of most spectroscopic surveys, they really are chemically uniform.
Yep.
So that's something you can look at in terms of the tails. Gianna De Silva, she looked at tails and environments, and I think she showed that they were chemically tagged.
Mm-hmm.
I just follow Wen's question about the shape. I think there are some claiming that open cluster has some substructures. I mean, they have some clumps, not only the one shape. So did you have a look of these pairing result of the known open clusters where the, which the pairing is correlated with their geometric shapes?
Are you asking whether I found like subclusters of known systems?
Yeah, I mean, for example, some structure, some open clusters may have some different, well, they are not concentrated together, but show different distracted concentrations. And these, I don't know if they have different kinematics, but if they are, they probably show different pairing features.
I see. Yeah, that's an interesting question. Unfortunately, the way we did the clustering, if you detect two subsystems nearby, it's not necessary, and it's possible the way we detected things that we artificially divided one system as two, so it's a little hard to tell from our current result.
So basically, this is kind of hierarchical, and you just cut off at some point.
Exactly. Okay. But one thing that I'm thinking is that the most important utility of our method is we define a probabilistically justified metric that uses measurement uncertainties. And I'm hoping to use that as a metric to do more refined clustering.
Excuse me, I also have a question. Did you try to divide the samples into in color bins so that we can estimate, for example, the young stars and intermediate age stars, how many of them haven't been totally disrupted, or how many of them we still can see the signature in velocity space? And maybe I think we can use that to measure like what's the fraction of stars formed finally in clusters or
That's a very interesting question. You said colors, but what you really want is ages,
right?
And one direction that I'm hoping is for this diffuse system, we can constrain their age using, for example, rotation periods measured by TESS. And it would be really cool to see the substructure disappearing in the data, but that's something I haven't done.
So I asked this question a while ago, but I haven't asked it for a while, so I'm going to ask it again.
Okay.
Did you relax the distance constraint on finding the co-moving pairs to find more pairs at larger separations?
I didn't, because I found out several mistakes that I made in the work, and one was that we were not considering the parallax uncertainty very carefully. And by that, I mean, so here's here from DR2 data, I made a parallax signal-to-noise ratio cut so that the distance error is about 10%. And for each star, I found all possible pairs within one parsec. What I'm showing is the projected separation. The projected is important here, and tangential velocity differences. When I made the initial sample to examine the likelihood ratio that I want to use, I made a cut in 3D separation, which is noisy because there is parallax uncertainties. So in this plane where I show the projected separation, which is going to be totally incorrect if you have pairs that are significantly different in parallax, so there is some radial distance. But if you do that for pairs where parallax uncertainties are not important, there is a clump that sort of separates out. And this is what For example, Karim has selected as wide binaries. So I realized that you need to be a little more careful when we want to push this to larger projective separation. But I think, and that is to say, in our selection, when we go out to larger projective separation, the contamination rate is very high. I still think, given Gaia's precision in the nearby volume, this is something to be investigated. It's possible that we may not be able to identify individual pairs where we can confidently say that they are probably disrupted Y binaries or something. But then there's a possibility we may be able to detect excess of pairs statistically. So that's why I didn't go beyond that.
So I have a quick comment about the open cluster. I mean, the collaboration you just showed, we're trying to find the tidal tails of all these open clusters. And so we just finished Coma Berenices, and we found the tails. And now we are doing these open cluster one by one within 1 kiloparsec. And what we find now is, the tails, we find a few have tails, and the orientation depends on the location, their position with respect to the disk. So if it's above the pin or on the disk, so they will have the orientation of the tails different with their orbital. Or, yeah, so that's what we found up to now.
Did you say few have tidal tails?
Yeah, we haven't finished, but I think many of them would have these tidal structures around the open cluster.
Okay.
Just a quick question. So is my intuition correct that because you have these clumps of stars, you can get ages more precise for each clump if you had an idea of metallicity and you have... So does it help you to... Do you get an improvement in age measurement?
Definitely. But it depends on the population you have. For example, if you have turn of stars, that's going to be
right.
Much more precise. But I think it definitely helps to have multiple
samples. Exactly, yeah.
Yes.
So in that sense, what is the dynamic range you think in ages? And could these, is there a dynamic range that is enough to, say, go to back to our favorite subject, the Gaia spiral? Could you then study the age profile or the age makeup of the stars contributing to it?
The dynamic range in age that I think of for these systems is just star formation to about a giga year.
Okay, so that should be good enough.
I think so.
A slightly different question about ages, perhaps, is are people getting improved estimates of the blue straggler fraction in open clusters?
I don't have an answer, sorry.
You don't have an answer.
How can you tell if the blue stragglers are just youngish mainstream?
Well, if they're populous enough. Yes, if they're populous enough.
Yeah. And there is a clear turn off because
what's published in the literature so far is based on almost uncorrected color magnitude diagrams for foreground disk contamination, so you really can't tell. So I would have thought that with Gaia you could do a much better cleaning. But I don't know who's doing it. Thanks.
I have a quick question. So do you have some idea of the mass ratio of these wide binaries?
Well, you were at the sprint, weren't you?
Yeah.
but
so there was,
to the audience.
So there was something that Karim El-Badri was looking at. Yeah, but and the gist is that he's finding excess of equal mass ratio wide binaries. And I don't have an answer, but in terms of their formation, I was thinking that it's interesting to think of that in terms of their formation scenarios. Dynamically, but I don't have that much to say about it. Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Can also have been right.